Good afternoon. I've grouped questions together in different aspects, and there are really three questions that I'll be answering. And the first question is, are all circumstances related to the law of karma? Are there ever random, fortunate, or unfortunate happenings? In other words, everybody hopes that there's something that's going to come for nothing. Master tells us that in the law of karma, and the law of karma is not fatalism, because through our spiritual actions, we can overcome the law of karma, and certainly through the practice of Kriya Yoga. But karma should not be confused with what some people call fate. Paramahansaji said, there is really no such force as fate. Our lives are governed by our past actions. Once we can understand that, you don't get something you don't deserve. It helps considerably to see that when something comes that we don't like, it's simply a prod to us to change ourselves. And Master tells us that karma follows you from incarnation to incarnation, if necessary. If you don't have time to work it all out this time, it'll stay with you. You have a little bundle to take into the next one. Now, the next two questions are related to this. Is it okay to play the slot machines once in a while? Or will this develop a bad addictive habit, so it is better not to start? I know someone who, whenever she needs some money, seems to win a lot. The next one is, should one play the lottery to make money and to help finance Master's organization? Now that goes with that law of karma, you see. I found a little quote that says, gambling is a method of getting nothing for something. Master tells us that God is on one side, Maya on the other, and mankind in the middle, and we choose whether we go towards God in our actions or go towards Maya. And Maya makes it so tempting. It is so easy to visualize winning the lottery. And it's so hard to visualize the spiritual eye. You see, Maya has better advertising. They must have a better agent. And the lottery is not the only thing. Maya's got a few other little trinkets that it dangles. Even when we sit to meditate, when we sit to try to practice Hong Sa, Maya starts saying, well, isn't it going to be wonderful when we get all of these powers, all these spiritual powers come to us? Oh, we'll be supermen and superwomen. Everything will be wonderful. And all the time, Maya is keeping you from practicing Hong Sa and turning you backwards. Regarding gambling or taking chances to help Master's organization, it would be a little better karma, just a little better, if you'd start a business and become very successful and go into business with Master. At least tithe and give him a portion of the money as you're earning it, and then later make enough to really share with the Guru, rather than think that you can get it some other way. But it is strange how Maya, and the ego is pretty well in tune with Maya, makes us think that all of these things should come to us. We think that it should be all right to go out and have a beer with the boys, or to have a glass of wine, you know, or intoxicating drugs. That's one of Maya's toys. And certainly everyone knows that they deserve a perfect marriage partner. That is how deluding Maya is, yet we know we're not quite perfect. Remember that Jesus said, the devil was a liar from the beginning. Maya is a lie. But it sure is an enticing one, isn't it? Trying to entice us to find an easy way. The only way we can be satisfied is we must make the effort. We are the ones who have to earn. So try, if you're going to make karma, make good karma. I like the questions. Can one partake fully of this physical world and still attain self-realization? You know, everybody's trying it. What do you mean by partaking fully of this world? Most of us, as we go along on the spiritual path, we're looking for a plateau. You know, I want to hold on to these things that I like to do in life, all of these tools of Maya, and I want to hold on to the spiritual things that I've begun to develop, but I would like to rest a while. I don't want to go too fast. And Master tells us that there is no resting point. Either you are going towards God or you go backwards. And Maya even tells you that you can rest. So it comes in and helps a little bit to keep you in delusion. Sri Yukteswar tells us in the Holy Science, man enjoys a thing when he so desires. At the time of enjoyment, however, if he directs his organs of sense through which he enjoys towards the objects of his desire, he can never be satisfied, and his desires increase in double force. On the contrary, if he can direct his organs of sense inward towards his self, at that time he can satisfy his heart immediately. So the practice of pratyahara, the changing of the direction of the voluntary nerves inward, is a desirable way to fulfill his worldly desires. And so Sri Yukteswar is telling us there is a way that we can fulfill the worldly desires, completely fulfill them, rather than increase them. In the autobiography, it mentions a couple of times that Kriya Yoga is the solution to all life's problems. When you become interiorized, when you can turn that consciousness within, Kriya Yoga is a solution. Satan can continue to keep you with problems to solve for an infinite number of lifetimes. So, now this is the thing that one must use his discrimination when thinking of how to partake fully of this physical world. The Gita says, that elusive happiness which originates and ends in self-delusion, stemming from too much sleep, idleness and miscomprehension, is called tamasic. And the guru said, man chooses evil happiness when his discrimination is deluded by innate bad karma or bad company, an inner response to evil. Indulgence in tamasic qualities is followed by the eclipse of discrimination and by disillusionment and despondency. So, if partaking of the physical world means tamasic qualities, then it will lead you to despondency. Then he talks about the rajasic, that happiness which springs from the conjunction of the senses and matter is termed rajasic. It seems like nectar in the beginning and like poison in the end. In his interpretation, the nature of happiness born of blind actions is described here. A person who experiences physical pleasure after strenuous effort to attain it enjoys for a while ambrosial happiness, followed by poisonous unhappiness when the impermanent pleasure of the senses wanes. The initial state of happiness accompanying sensuality is always followed by unhappiness. That's worth reading again. The initial state of happiness Accompanying sensuality is always followed by unhappiness. Owing to the impairment of the physical vitality, mental self-control, and spiritual peace. It is the enigma of Maya that the poison of sensual experiences is found to be so pleasant in the beginning. Then there's a third type of experience we have, the sattvic. That happiness which is born of self-realization and clear perceptive discrimination is called sattvic. It seems like poison at first, but like nectar afterwards. When you first sit in the meditation posture, it's poison. The back aches, the body tells you, I don't like this. The guru said, when the victorious yogi, after his experiences of spiritual struggle, tastes through his interiorized intuitive discrimination the spiritual blessedness of the soul, the true happiness he feels is called sattvic. That blessedness is unending, ever new. So one must use his discrimination when thinking of how to partake fully of this physical world. Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Most people start practicing yoga for a little while and look at God and say, where are all these things you're going to give me? In other words, long before they find God, they start saying, I was seeking God to get the things I wanted in life. You have to put God first, and you have to find God first before all of these things are added unto you. The next question, what does SRF think of marriage? I mean, can a man or a woman married have a success in self-realization? And I answer that by saying a couple of our gurus were married, and I think they did pretty well. Larry Mahashai, of course, is a great example of a householder, and you can read it in the autobiography. Sri Yukteswar did all right in being a disciple of Larry Mahashai. When we get to Westerners, can Westerners as householders, I think Rajasi Janakananda might have passed the test. Master said that Rajasi reached that highest state. He had the same state of consciousness that he had. And Rajasi certainly was a householder. I had the opportunity to only meet Rajasi once. I think Brother Achalananda has already talked about me a little bit. But my first visit to Self-Realization Fellowship was in the Convocation Garden Party in 1953. And Brother Achalananda had attended the class series, and of course he knew the Hong Sao and the Om technique, and it was my first event. I hadn't attended anything. And it was held at Mother Center. And the man who had introduced Brother Achalananda to SRF came down on the tennis court at Mother Center and told us that Rajasi was up on the lawn blessing everyone. So I got up and went up, and as soon as I reached the top of the steps at the tennis court, I just felt waves of peace and joy coming from Rajasi. I knew intuitively he's got it. He's realized. Now, it's not easy to know whether somebody's realized or not, but I was just convinced he was realized. And one of the monks, one of the older monks who has since passed away, Brother Sarolananda, was standing next to Rajasi, and he had his hands in the pronoun position. It was just like his head was on his shoulder. And the only solution I could say, just thinking of Sarolananda, he's drunk. Well, he was, with the bliss coming from Rajasi. But besides Rajasi, there have been many, both men and women, who, getting back to your question, who had success in the practice of self-realization. I have one question that was handed to me just a few minutes before. There's a person who has been following another path and thinks that Master is Guru and very much would like to include this question. How do you know who your Guru is, and how do you know when you should change from one path to another? Master said that we should follow a path for 1 year and practice what that path teaches to find out if it is the right thing for us before one can become a member or officially take Self-Realization Fellowship as their path. They have to take the lessons for 1 year. And of course, they have to intuitively know that this is the right path. When you start following a path, if you begin to get results, again, I will simply say that when I decided to take the lessons, and it was some 6 months after feeling and knowing that Rajasi was realized before I could convince myself to take the lessons. And when I did decide to take the lessons, I said to myself, okay, I'll try it. If I get some results from these techniques that they're talking about, I'll keep on. If I don't, forget it. And when I took the energizing exercises, which is in lesson 8, 2 months after you start taking them, immediately I got results from the practice of the energizing exercises. I suddenly found that the energy, Master says, one of the results of the energizing is the energy fills the brain. And I found when I went to work that day that I was mentally alert all day long. I thought, man, I found something here. And I had. And of course, I still have that attitude. If I don't get something out of it, I'm not going to continue following it. I've only been doing it 40 years. Now, when I started practicing the techniques, of course, I certainly was not even concerned about whether Yogananda would be my guru or not. By the time I finished the 1 year of lessons, I knew this was the right path. I never had any question at all, no problem. Just signed up and took Kriya Yoga, become a disciple. And if it's the right path for you, you will know it. Intuition is the true guidance. Intuition is our guidance from God. And when you get that, follow it. Why does Master say that celibacy is necessary for unmarried persons? Can this not be an expression of love in a long-term relationship? Is this not an area that should be looked into in terms of compatibility? The second question, are normal sexual relations between husband and wife a barrier to self-realization? If so, is celibacy required even for married couples? We're getting back to that law of karma again. Sri Yukteswar tells us in the Holy Science that the soul goes through experiences in the mineral, the plant, the animal, the human, and of course it is to advance into super consciousness, Christ consciousness, and cosmic consciousness. And he says in the Holy Science that when you remove one sheath or one layer of delusion from one of these, from the mineral, you have the plant consciousness. He says when you remove the sheath from the plant and come to the animal, the atoms perceive the nature of the external world, and attracting other atoms of different nature, form bodies as necessary for enjoyment. And thus the animal kingdom appears in creation. In man, when the next sheath is removed, the body of intelligence composed of electricity becomes perceptible. The atom, having the power of determining right from wrong, becomes man, the rational being in creation. So the difference when we get into the human state of consciousness is we are a rational being and we have the determination to decide right from wrong. Paramahansa Yogananda says, when God gave mankind reason, God's responsibility ended. Isn't that awful? And you have the reason to decide which is right and which is wrong. And the next state of consciousness, devata or angel. And when you remove the next sheath, then chitta, the heart, becomes manifest. And man is called an angel in creation. Now, when the person asks the question that is deciding to have a sexual relationship or live with someone before they're married, it really means if you want to stay where you are, and the majority of the people on this planet want to stay there, then it is fine. You're using your reason to do what you want to do, and you can play with delusion as many incarnations as you like. But when you decide you want to be an angel, then you've got to use your reason and start trying to do things that angels do. God is not going to judge you. The law of karma is here. God is your loving father, but the law of karma isn't quite so loving sometimes. Now, if we want to get to the superconscious state, the state of becoming an angel, we have to make a commitment to begin to control the five senses, this outer desires that we have. And when we try to make a commitment and change ourselves, we usually find that habit is the thing that is most difficult to overcome. We want to do something, and yet the old habits, suddenly we've done the thing we don't want to do. It comes right back to us. And if the person that is deciding to have a sexual relationship or live with someone first will use that reason a little bit, you will realize that you're going to find more than one person in this life that you've been very close to in other lives. And if you make a habit of living with each one of those, it's going to be hard to make a habit of loyalty or change that. And so the next time someone comes along, you'll simply leave that one and go to the next one, and over again. So I wouldn't say that that's a good habit to continue. When you are drawn to a path of yoga, a path of discipline, it is time to start practicing discipline. Don't wait and hope that it'll be easier next incarnation. You'll just simply add more bad habits to it. There is another thing that as people who are striving to improve themselves, whatever example they set in life influences other people. You are the examples of the people who are starting on the path. And if you're not following the Ten Commandments, the Yama Niyama, just saying, well, it's not important, then so will you set that example for others, including your children when you have those. So it is better for you karmically to realize that your example is influencing others and start to control yourself and learn to say no, as the children in school are being advised. Now, there were two questions. I think I've answered the first one. The second one, is celibacy required for married couples? And certainly in his lessons and his teaching, Paramahansaji tells us that moderation is to be practiced by married couples. Moderation with the cultivation of love uppermost in the consciousness. As one practices meditation over a period of time, there may be a lessening of the desire. Now, the question comes often is, what is moderation? It's easy for me to know what moderation in eating is. It's less than I want. Much less. Brother Ananda Moy's tape on spiritual marriage answers very beautifully most of these questions. Listen to it over and over again. You will find that guidance that you need to know how to live in married life. For devotees married to non-devotees who feel threatened by SRF, that is, the non-devotees are threatened. I hope the devotees aren't threatened by SRF. Could you give some tips for harmonious relations and how to make space in the marriage for practice of the techniques? And another question related, I have small children and a husband who doesn't want me to meditate. So most of my spiritual life is through the practice of the presence. I would love some tips and inspiration on this practice. Master tells us that the yogi must make a greater effort to make the marriage successful when the marriage partner is not a member or not meditating. That means that you have to think of others, think of their needs, try to be with them as much as you possibly can when they are with you. You have to choose your time and place to meditate that will be harmonious. You have to play with your children or mix with them or whatever you need to do at the time they're awake. But Yogananda said that for many people, you have to get up before anyone else does to meditate in the morning. Now, those who have very small children, you get an alarm clock every 2 or 3 hours. The baby wakes up and you have to go take care of it. So choose one of those times to meditate for 15 or 20 minutes or so. It's not easy to meditate at 2 o'clock in the morning, but it's easier than when the family is all up and around. I often talk to businessmen and tell them to meditate in their office before they go home, so that when they get home, they can be with the wife and children. Or stop somewhere on the road. Don't do it while you're, don't try to meditate driving now, but you can stop on the road at a park or someplace and meditate. And then, of course, meditate a little bit before retiring. But the yogi has to make an effort. And it is very important that you do not think that you're superior because you're meditating. There is a tendency to think, well, I'm doing the right thing spiritually, so I'm much better than so-and-so who is not meditating or not making any effort. That person may get to God before you do, so give them respect for whatever they have. The best way to change people is by example. Sri Dhyanamata said, by the example of our behavior, not thinking that we're better, not showing off that we are meditating regularly, but expressing the kindness, thoughtfulness, love, understanding that begin to develop within us as a part of self-realization. As you meditate, you begin to develop these divine qualities. And she says, let those be the thing that helps to change others. The next question. I'm married to a wonderful woman. We are both Kriya Bonds and in our late 30s. We are thinking of starting a family. Are we crazy? I like the way you wrote your questions anyway. Then it continues, please discuss the pros and cons of having children, especially when both parents are in their late 30s and on the path. Should SRF followers forego having children to make their lives less complicated and have more time to meditate? Or do children help work out our karma? I think I'll answer that last part of the question first. One of the major purposes of marriage is to learn to love someone more than you love yourself, to get out of egotism and think of someone first. And when you're getting married, that should be the way you strive to think of each other. In fact, I tell couples to try to go 90% of the way of thinking of the other person first or doing what the other person wants to do, because your ego will tell you you're doing it all, but it also tells the other person they're doing it all. So feel like you're going almost all the way. But it is more natural. There is a more natural love for your children, even than there is the love between husband and wife. And so it is easier to think of your child and love your child more than you love yourself. Many parents will go hungry to feed their children. And so that shows you love. You think of them first before you think of yourself. So yes, children are a good part of the family life. Master says, earthly marriage is meant for the propagation of the species and for gradual spiritual development of souls towards liberation and the perfect love of God. And in the marriage vows, part of the vows state, we are united to fulfill the laws of creation, and we aspire to bring souls on earth to worship God in newborn forms, and may our children serve as spiritual examples. The person wanted some pros and cons about marriage or about having children. Certainly, we can all see that the world is a little overpopulated, and so it is better not to have as many children as our ancestors did. I sometimes mention in Phoenix to the members that on my mother's side of the family, there were 14 brothers and sisters, and on my father's side, there were only 22. I was an only child. They learned something. Also, to have children, both parents should want them, and they should make a commitment to treat the children with proper love and proper guidance or discipline. Now, the things that are pro for having children, Master said, quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, that the rare opportunity comes for someone to be born of yogic parents, and you wouldn't want to deprive some great soul to come back. So, the one other thing this person said, or should we save our time for our meditation? And you know, all of this great time that we save, we use it for watching TV, dining out, recreation. And if you're meditating 8 hours a night, like many of the yogis in the autobiography, then you might save the time for it. Otherwise, learn to love. Many women work outside the home, yet have a full evening of homemaking duties afterwards. Yogananda said men and women have separate roles or duties, but his ideal mother didn't have to work outside the home, and she had a housekeeper. How much help and what kind of duties can the husband do to share the wife's double load? I hear a little negation in the question. You know, if the wife has a double load, the husband has a double load also. And if she's telling it to him negatively, he might have a triple load. Conditions have changed since the time Master talked. And certainly, with both working, the husband and wife should share some of the duties, but it should be with a positive attitude. In other words, one person may be more efficient at doing a particular type of work and can do it much quicker. In your compromising, try to take that into account. And try to share, make sure that each of you are taking a part of the burden. One other aspect of both of you working and trying to support a family is that each person needs some time off. One of the greatest gifts you can give each other is a half day or a full day with no duties. And so, no matter what the duties are, try to do them all one day so that the other person can do some of the things they like to do or have some time off. And having mental harmony is much more important than sharing the duties. If you know that you're both working together, striving together, if you know someone is on your side, then it is much easier. That is the purpose of marriage. We used to say help meet. Someone who will help you meet the conditions of life that come. And so you want to be positive with each other and say, I will help you. Instead of saying, that's your work, I don't do that. That's not love when you say that's your work. The real love you're looking for is, I will help you. We'll work it out together. And of course, the most important is the spiritual. And you inspire someone to be spiritual by your example, but it is very good to meditate together, but it's also good to have respect. That is a part of Master's vows. And I mentioned to those getting married that if you can remember that this pure soul loves me, everyone is a pure soul. You might have a lot of karma, a mud of karma, but you're a pure soul. If this pure soul loves me, you can never lose respect. So that is the way to keep that respect that you have. People get their hearts broken many times by human love. Is this trying to teach us to love God alone, or is it just bad karma? Yes, people have gotten their hearts, all of the great tragedies in our literature and everything are written about brokenhearted love of the human type. People have looked for perfect understanding and perfect love from others, and it can only come from the union with God. But if you get that union with God, then it is quite easy to share love with others. Sri Dayamata said, "It isn't difficult to give love because the very nature of our souls is love." Now, the reason we find it hard to give love or to love other people is because we have been hurt and we're afraid we'll be hurt again. And love cannot be hurt. The ego can be hurt. So just keep knowing that love is your very nature. In the sayings of Yogananda, there's a very nice little saying that answers this question. One of the disciples said, "Master, I love everyone." And the guru said, "You should love only God." Later, the disciple met Master and he said, "Do you love others?" And the disciple said, "I keep my love only for God." Master said, "You should love all with the same love." And the disciple says, "Sir, what's your meaning? First you say that love is all wrong, then you say that to exclude anyone is wrong." The master said, "You are attached to the personality of people. That leads to limiting attachments. When you truly love God, you will see Him in every face and will know what it means to love all. It is not forms and egos we should adore, but the indwelling Lord in everyone. He alone imbues His creatures with life, charm, and individuality." Master says that when you expand your love to love someone more than yourself, and love your family, then you should use that same love to learn to love everyone. That is the way you grow through family love. So first you have to learn to love God, and then you can expand that love to others. Are there any help programs for giving our children a spiritual foundation when we don't have access to an SRF temple? Do you have any suggestions? What is the best approach to handle children who are resistant to meditation? How do we know when we are going too far in encouraging spiritual life in them? This is a question that is very close to my heart because I've been working for many, many years with our youth programs and with our Sunday school programs. Of course, all of the parents say, "Well, you only have to work with my children for a week. I have to live with them the other 51 weeks." And this is very true, and I don't have to work with them every minute of that week. But there are many things that we need to understand. The person says, "What can I do if a temple is not available where I can send them to Sunday school?" Well, don't think that the Sunday school teachers are going to make angels out of your children in 1 hour a week. They spend most of that hour getting them to say an opening prayer, meditating a couple of minutes, and having arts and crafts and games, maybe one or two little spiritual stories. It's about all the Sunday school teacher can get across other than taking care of the children. Now, you as parents are the ones who have to give the spiritual training. And you have to find it from Master's books, from Master's teachings. Charles Barkley, the basketball player that we have in Phoenix now, told the parents, he said, "I am not the role model. You're the role model for your children." And it is very true. The basketball players, the football heroes, are not your role models. And neither are the Sunday school teachers. The parents are the role model that teach the children. One quote that I have used for years with the youth program, a famous scholar counseled, "From the day your baby is born, you must teach him to do things. Children today love luxury too much. They have detestable manners. They flaunt authority. They have no respect for their elders. They no longer rise when their parents or teachers enter the room. What kind of awful creatures will they be when they grow up?" Now that sounds like it was written today. Those words are Socrates, 300 BC. It's still the same problem. The parents have to set the example in the home of how the children are trained, and the home should be a place of peace and love. Master says that his mother disciplined them with stories from the epics of India, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, those two great epics. She used spiritual stories to educate them and discipline at the same time. The parents in SRF have the use of not only all of the stories that you heard from the Judaic Christian background, you have all of the stories from these two scriptures, plus you have all of the stories that Master gave you in the autobiography, plus his Man's Eternal Quest and Divine Romance, the autobiography of a yogi, all of them are full of stories that you can use. The other part of the question, when do we know when we're going too far about disciplining the children? I was talking to some parents not too long ago, and I said, if you think something is beneficial to your children, you do it. For instance, you think going to school is beneficial for your children, and you make your children get up every morning and go to school. Now, your children do not want to get up. You don't think, is this going to make them hate school? You don't even think about it. You make them get up and go to school. In fact, you also have to make them go to bed at night. They don't want to go to bed either. You have to make them study. You don't let them decide, I don't like the way they do arithmetic, and so I'm not going to study arithmetic. No, they have to study. They have to find out what mankind has learned. Why do you do that? Why do you make them go to school? You think by making them go to school, they're going to be able to earn more money and therefore make themselves more happy. And you've already found out by earning more money, it didn't make you happy. It's only when you get yoga in your life that you begin to find something will make you happy. And I wrote down just a few of the things of yoga that I think, and I'm not trying to say that they have to become followers of Self-Realization Fellowship. These things are beneficial. Physically, there is posture. A straight spine is beneficial to health and happiness. If you have a mood, you have to drop your chin, you know, and hang on to it. If you have right posture, it's hard to stay in a mood, a bad mood. Breathing is very important. Proper breathing, an absolute necessity in yoga. Concentration or paying attention is necessary. The value of practicing self-discipline is needed by every child. Proper care of the body, cleanliness included, as well as exercise, is very, very important. Learning to keep the body agile by practicing hatha yoga or some other forms of exercise. And a reverence for life. That is all necessary physically. A few things I wrote down mentally: positive attitude towards life. That is one of the most important. The world, Maya, is trying to teach everyone that they're not worthy. Not worthy of knowing God, not worthy of finishing school, not worthy of anything. A positive attitude towards life. Learning to behave, learning to get along with others, learning to serve others. It is very important that we learn those things, that the parents teach those things to the children. And spiritually, try to teach the child that they have a divine birthright. They are not only a child in a physical form, but a child of God. And so rather than thinking of yourself as a sinner, think of yourself as a child of God. And in doing that, practice meditation, practice devotion, practice prayer. Chanting is good. Whenever there is free time, turn the attention back to God. Heavenly Father, make us receptive to a greater inflow of thy love, thy wisdom, thy understanding. Make us aware of thy guidance in our everyday life, through our conscience, and may with our common sense we act to do the right thing in everything we do. Fill our souls with ever new joy. Om. Peace. Amen.